Welcome to the Ultimate College Football Podcast, providing national coverage of America's greatest sport. Join us for bi-weekly episodes throughout the season, and remember to subscribe and rate or review the show wherever you get your podcast. If you would like to contact the show, please email us at ultimatecfbpod@gmail.com or via Twitter at @CFB_ultimate. Welcome back to the Ultimate College Football Podcast. As on today's episode, we are going to be previewing the second week of bowl season, and this is where bowl season really gets into full swing. We have the majority of interesting matchups, and most of the games are on this week. And what I'm calling a week is from December 26th, Tuesday, through New Year's Day. So today's episode is going to be dedicated to all of the bowls from that time, with the exclusion of the six New Year's Six bowl games, which of course include the two semifinals. We're going to have specific episodes, two 1-4-4 major bowls outside of the playoff, and then one for the playoff. So let's dive in to Tuesday, December 26th, the day after Christmas. We've got a triple header, still kind of a lighter day in the bowl season, but things do improve after this. So the first game up is 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, the ninth edition of the Quick Lane Bowl, although there have been previous bowls in Detroit. So this is the 28th edition of a Detroit bowl game, and most of those have come consecutively, largely in the 21st century. It features Bowling Green, a 7-5 team from the MAC that did defeat a bowl-eligible Georgia Tech team in the regular season, versus Minnesota, the only 5-7 team to make it to the postseason, and they made it by virtue of a certain academic score. I think it's the APR score or something like that. Interestingly enough, back in 2015, the same situation allowed Minnesota to make it to a bowl game, and it was, once again, the Quick Lane Bowl. Their most recent trip to this bowl game was in 2018, so they're making their third appearance overall. For Minnesota, they had a really poor end to the season, losing their last four games, and a lot of that was due to just a pretty inept offense, 125th total and 126th in passing offense. This is a team that needs to run the ball because that's really all that they can do with much consistency. And their quarterback throughout much of the year, he transferred. So this Minnesota isn't exactly in the best situation. And defensively, their defensive coordinator, Joe Rossi, he left for Michigan State. So this Minnesota team is not in the best shape entering this bowl game. For Bowling Green, their offense isn't very good either, ranking 108th in the nation. But they've got a strong defense, 25th nationally. And I think they're going to be pretty motivated for this game. You've got a bowl game against a Big Ten opponent. They finished the season 5-1, so they've got some momentum. I think this is going to be a pretty motivated Bowling Green team, and despite having the inferior roster, I do like the Falcons to win this one, and they've shown the capability to play with some Power 5 opponents. I already noted a Georgia Tech win earlier in the season, so Bowling Green making their second straight Quick Lane Bowl appearance. I think this one will have a better end than last year's loss to New Mexico State. After this one, 5:30 Eastern on ESPN is the 14th edition of the First Responder Bowl from Dallas, Texas, played on SMU's campus, and it features 7-5 Texas State making their bowl debut against Rice, a 6-6 school. So two in-state teams colliding, obviously, for Texas State. This is a first for their program, and for Rice, they haven't been to a lot of bowls in the past decade, so I think both teams will be excited for this one. Rice, they're a team that struggles offensively, and JT Daniels, who a very experienced quarterback, very familiar name for you guys, he got injured late in the year, decided to retire from football, so this offense already was in rough shape, but they're probably going to have to win a slugfest, and we'll see if they can keep it low scoring, because this Texas State is a very explosive offense, 14th nationally in total offense, really good at throwing the football. I think a lot of the metrics favor Texas State here, but maybe their defensive deficiencies will allow Rice's offense to overachieve, as Texas State has only the 107th total defense and 119th passing defense. So could see a pretty good game. Both of these teams had a fast start to the year, beating Big 12 opponents. Texas State defeated Baylor in September, and Rice defeated Houston. So it could be an even game, but I do like Texas State. I think they were a better team throughout most of the season, and they'll get their first bowl win and their first bowl appearance. Then the last game of the day is 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. The 34th edition of the Guaranteed Rate Bowl from Phoenix, Arizona, played in the Diamondback Stadium. So it's played in a baseball stadium. This bowl has gone by numerous names throughout the years, whether it's the Copper Bowl, the Insight Bowl, the Cactus Bowl. Even for a time it was known as the Cheez-It Bowl, so it's been called several different names. It used to be played at the Sun Devil Stadium, but has been played at the Diamondback Stadium as of late. It features Kansas, an 8-4 school, against UNLV, a 9-4 team, who was the Mountain West runner-up. Both of these teams run really good offenses. Kansas, unfortunately, their offensive coordinator, Andy Kotlinicki, he left for Penn State. So Kansas is without him for this game. And for the time being, the Rebels still have their highly touted OC, Brennan Morton, who was a hot name in the coaching carousel, but as of now, he is still the Rebels' OC. And that's a big win for Barry Odom and his program, having a fantastic first season, one of the best seasons maybe in school history, certainly in recent memory. But they did fade a little bit down the stretch, losing their last two. But this would be a really big bowl victory for the Rebels. I think they're going to see this as a great opportunity. And Kansas, they're going to need to play the Rebels. They're making their first bowl appearance since 2014, and their last win was back in 2000. So a huge game for the Rebs. Before the Jayhawks, their last bowl game before last year's Liberty Bowl came back in 2008 in this very game, and that's the last time they won a bowl. So for Kansas, even though they've really turned that program around under Lance Leipold, they still haven't been in this position for very long. So I still think, even though you're playing a Mountain West team, I imagine both teams will be up for this one, and Kansas just is the better roster, the better team. I think they're going to get the win, but could be a fun game, and certainly a game that has a chance to be pretty explosive offensively. Let's move on to Wednesday, December 27th. We've got four bowl games and some interesting matchups on this day. Starting off 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, the 14th Military Bowl from Annapolis, Maryland, home of the Naval Academy. We've got 6-6 Virginia Tech looking for their first bowl victory since 2016 against Tulane, a team that finishes the AAC runner-up with an 11-2 record and a win away from a second straight New Year's Six bowl appearance. For Virginia Tech, they're making their third appearance in this bowl that is tied for the most all time, and with a victory they will finish with their first winning season since 2019. So certainly a big opportunity for Brent Pry in a second year to continue to show some pretty significant signs of progress. For Tulane, unfortunately, they are a team that's been impacted by the coaching carousel. Willie Fritz, the longtime Tulane coach and very successful coach, he is gone, taking the job at Houston. And Tulane, they decide to get Johnston Rawl from Troy. But for this one, they're going to be coached by interim Sledge Nagel. So that certainly is a blow for Tulane. Tulane are making their first Military Bowl appearance, and something to monitor is if Michael Pratt will play. There is a belief that he is going to go to the NFL, although there have been some rumors that maybe he could transfer. He certainly would be a desirable name, but all indications point to him going pro. And as of now, he's still going to play in this game, but if he does opt out, that'd be a huge blow for the Green Wave. And they have some pretty big issues at backup, so hopefully he does play. For Tulane, they are a running team first and foremost, 8 overall in rushing offense. That probably is going to need to carry the day for the Green Wave. So it could be a fun one here, even though it is a Group of 5, Power 5 matchup. You've got a pretty good Group of 5 team against a 6-6 ACC school, probably kind of comparable teams here. I think it could be a good one. In the Military Bowl, after this, 5:30 Eastern on ESPN, we've got the 22nd edition of the Duke's Mayo Bowl from Charlotte, North Carolina, a rematch of the 2008 edition of this game. Two 8-4 teams of the ACC, North Carolina, and West Virginia of the Big 12. For West Virginia, they had a strong finish to the year, finishing 4-1. And their strength is running the football. They've got a really good offensive line that is without its anchor in center Zach Frazier, who injured himself, broke his leg late in the year. So that certainly is really unfortunate, but still a strong offensive line and a team that is third overall in rushing offense. So North Carolina, a team that has struggled defensively, they're going to be ready for a power physical rushing attack that's going to try to wear down North Carolina, control the clock, and keep the ball away from the Tar Heels' explosive offense. While the Mountaineers come into this game with some momentum, UNC, they stumble toward the end of the year, finishing 2-4. And it got pretty ugly for them. And unfortunately, the transfer portal is really hitting them hard. Drake May, star quarterback, he is opting out, as is their best wide receiver, Tez Walker, center Corey Gaynor, and All-American caliber linebacker Eric Gray, in addition to edge player Kamian Rucker. So this team really hit hard by the portal at some key positions, some of their best players. It's going to be very difficult for this Tar Heel team. I think if they have a chance, their offense needs to maintain the level of play that they've been used to in the Mack Brown era, but they're going to have to do it with a new quarterback. Fortunately, one of the best running backs in the nation, Omarion Hampton, he is still slotted to play in this game, expected to be back next year. Expect him to be a centerpiece of this offense, but West Virginia, they probably know that. So I do think North Carolina still probably going to need to be balanced to have success in this game. I like West Virginia. I think they're a stronger team currently, certainly down the stretch, but especially with the portal defections. But two teams that identical records, Power 5 opponents, you kind of want to have these type of matchups in bowl season. We've got one of them. We'll see if it ends up being a good game, but do like West Virginia, as North Carolina is making their record 6th appearance in this bowl game, but they only have a 1-4 record, so we'll see if they can kind of change the trajectory there. And the Tar Heels made their most recent appearance just a couple years ago, back in 2021. A little later, 8 p.m. Eastern, over on Fox, we've got the 44th Holiday Bowl from San Diego, California, featuring Louisville, a 10-3 team, and the ACC runner-up against 7-5 USC. Cardinals are making their debut in the Holiday Bowl, while USC is looking for their first bowl victory since 2016. Louisville, this is a team that's had a really good year and has not been hit too hard by the portal. They're a really good offensive team, 16th nationally and 13th in running the football. So they are balanced. They play complementary football. Defensively, probably a little underrated. They've got a pretty aggressive unit that makes a lot of negative plays. They've got a quick and aggressive defensive line. And that's going to make life, I think, really challenging for USC, because Louisville is good in the areas where USC is weak. USC defensively is not a good football team, and they're going to lean against a very explosive Louisville attack. And then USC, their offensive line was quite porous this season. I don't think that bodes well against what is a very solid Louisville defensive line. And USC is going to be without their superhero in Caleb Williams. He kind of dragged the carcass that was USC football throughout most of the season. And he, of course, is opting out. And unfortunately for the Trojans, he isn't the only opt-out. Some other really big contributors, like running back Marshawn Lloyd, wide receiver Brendan Rice, defensive lineman Dijon Benton, and safety Callan Bullock, they are all opting out. They've even had some more opt-outs since then, even on the offensive line, which they can ill afford. They do have Zachariah Branch, the All-American specialist slash wide receiver, so you know, they've got that going for them. He could really have a big day, or certainly you would hope that for USC, but I think it's a game that really has blowout potential. I don't expect a good one here, but will be interesting to see with a month to prepare for Lincoln Riley, what is kind of a new era for Trojan football, what he can dial up But they're going to go with Miller Moss at QB. He's not expected to be the starter next season, but we'll see how they kind of tailor the offense, especially with all these defections, to his strength and skill set. And they probably need the offense to have a big day if they're going to have a chance in this one. The last game of the day is 9 p.m. Eastern, the Texas Bowl, the 17th edition of this specific bowl game, but the 52nd overall of a Houston-based bowl game. We've got an old Big 12 South clash and a rematch of the 2019 edition of this game. Oklahoma State, the Big 12 runner-up, at 9-4 versus the 7-5 Texas A&M Aggies. For Oklahoma State, not a very good defensive team this year, 124th in total D, 106 against the run. But they are a team that has found success on the ground. Ollie Gordon, the Doak Walker Award winner, All-American running back, is kind of the engine that fuels this team. And using him as kind of their centerpiece, they've been able to find some offensive success, have been able to be balanced. Alan Bowman's had a good year under center. And despite their defensive statistics, they have been able to generate some stops. They're a team that tends to get better as the game goes on. And as of now, Colin Oliver, maybe their best defensive player, he is still expected to play, so that certainly is a bonus. Now, when you're looking just at the talent on both teams, A&M has the clear advantage, but Oklahoma State had the better team this year, or at least a more successful team. And A&M, they are a team that has just been decimated by the transfer portal, as they, of course, made a coaching change. Mike Elko was hired, and he has not been able to keep a lot of these star players, or at least on paper star players. Some of the guys who are opting out, and this is a long list, so bear with me. But wide receiver Anaya Smith, who is one of their better offensive players, tight end Jake Johnson, offensive lineman Chase Benatis, and Leighton Robinson. At the defensive line, some really heavy hitters left, like Walter Nolan and McKinley Johnson, as well as defensive end LT Overton. At linebacker, Edgerrin Cooper, and then a cornerback, Tyreek Chappell, and Deuce Harmon. And then to finish it off, safety Bryce Anderson. I think there's even been some more additional opt-outs as well. So I don't think the roster for A&M is in great shape here. And I actually expect Oklahoma State to win this one. I think they are just a better team, even though the talent isn't necessarily there. This A&M team did not have a good season. And just with the particulars of what's going on in Colt Station, I wouldn't expect a great performance. But certainly an interesting matchup, two familiar teams, at least historically, or at least last 30 years, even though they haven't played a lot. So a kind of a fun one there to wrap up that day of bowl games. Moving on to Thursday, December 28th, we've got probably the best day of bowls outside of the semifinals on New Year's Day, or maybe some other days with New Year's Six bowls. We've got a quadruple header starting off 11 a.m. Eastern, the Fenway Bowl, the second edition of this game from Boston at the Red Sox Stadium. We've got a game that's going to be next season, an ACC matchup. SMU, the 11-2 AAC champion, versus 6-6 Boston College. For Boston College, second bowl game since 2017, and the first in the Jeff Hafley era, so it was really a necessity for him to get his team to the postseason. Able to do that, see if they can finish with a winning record. Now, that would be a nice accomplishment. But the Eagles, certainly not a very good team this year, and finished the year poorly, losing their final three games. Now, they are a team that, if you're looking for a bright spot, it's in rushing offense, where they rank 19th, and then in pass defense, where they rank 28th. Unfortunately, they aren't complementary, as their passing game is only 105th nationally, and their run defense is only 125th. So some real deficiencies here, and we'll see if SMU can exploit that. They are a pretty balanced team. They rank 12th nationally in total offense and defense, so they're good on both sides of the ball. Unfortunately, Preston Stone is out with injury, but he's been out for a couple games, and they still won the AAC championship without him with Kelvin Jennings, and he now has some starting experience under his belt. I think the Mustangs feel pretty good about him entering this game. But for SMU, I think it's an interesting bowl matchup because you're going head-to-head against a team that is mediocre in your future conference. So it kind of gives you an idea of where you stack up and what is an exciting new era of SMU football entering the Power 5. Even though this has been a banner year for the Mustangs, they've not been successful against Power 5 opponents, going 0-2 this year. We'll see if they can get a Power 5 victory and continue the positive momentum as they finish with a 9-game winning streak. They're trying to up that to 10. The next game is 2:15 Eastern, also on ESPN, the 13th edition of the Pinstripe Bowl from the Bronx in New York City, played at the Yankee Stadium, an old Big East matchup between Rutgers, a 6-6 team of the Big Ten, and the ACC's Miami Hurricanes, coming in with a 7-5 record, making their first bowl in what is now the second season under Mario Cristobal. For Rutgers, this is their first season where they became bowl eligible since 2014. They did play in a bowl game in 2021, the only other bowl in the Greg Schiano era. But if you remember, the situation there is that they were a late substitute to the Gator Bowl because of Texas A&M having to bow out of that game due to COVID. So kind of a unique situation there. This time they actually earned their way to the postseason. I imagine Rutgers is really excited for this trip and for the opponent that they get to play. Even though the Scarlet Knights have not been a frequent bowl participant, they are making their record third appearance, which is tied for the most all-time in the Pinstripe Bowl. For Rutgers, they are a team that's really built like the stereotypical Big Ten team. They don't throw the ball very well, 127th in passing offense, 123rd just in total offense, but they are pretty good at running the football, even using their quarterback in the run game. And defensively, a stout team, 11th in passing defense, which is key against this Miami attack, and 19th in total D. So this is a team that I think maybe is built to take on Miami pretty well, and Rutgers is being impacted minimally by opt-outs, as only cornerback Max Melton is not going to play. So the Knights are in pretty good shape. For Miami, kind of stumbled down the stretch with a 3-5 and 1-3 finish. They are a team, though, that is looking to turn the tide in postseason play, as they've lost their last four bowls, including their only other Pinstripe Bowl appearance back in 2018. Despite only having a 7-5 record, statistically, Miami is a pretty good team, 26 in total offense and defense, and a particularly good team in rushing defense, 11th nationally, which really stacks up well when you're looking at Rutgers, because they are kind of a one-dimensional running offense. So if Miami can shut that down, that is going to really go a long ways towards winning this one. Unfortunately for Miami, the quarterback position is a real concern. Tyler Van Dyke is transferring, and Emory Williams injured himself, so they are really thin there, and they've been hit hard by the portal. Some notable defections include wide receiver Colby Young, defensive tackle Leonard Taylor, edge player Joffrey Harvey, linebacker Corey Flagg, safety James Williams, and another safety in Cameron Kitchens. So this is a team very thin, especially on the back end. I'm not sure if that's going to be a huge problem, considering that Rutgers doesn't throw the ball well. But needless to say, could be a very close game here in a Pinstripe Bowl. I like Rutgers. I think the roster having fewer portal / NFL defections is going to really help. And I think probably more motivated here. Miami has not been a very good bowl team, and they tend to lose these type of games. So I'm going to go with Rutgers to win this one while securing a win season. After this one, 5:45 Eastern on ESPN, we've got the 34th edition of the Pop-Tarts Bowl from Orlando, which, if you're kind of wondering how this is the 34th edition of this bowl game, it's because it always goes by a corporate title. It's the first year it's being called the Pop-Tarts Bowl, but it is that Orlando bowl game that's been around for a long time. One point known as the Tangerine Bowl, also known as the Champ Sports or Russell Athletic or Camping World, or even most recently the Cheez-It Bowl. So I'm sure you are familiar with this game, and it features a pretty good matchup. I think this is actually one of the better matchups of bowl season outside of the major bowls. You've got 8-4 Kansas State, the 25th ranked team in the nation from the Big 12, versus the ACC's 18th ranked NC State Wolfpack, coming in with a 9-3 record, looking for a 10-win season. The Wolfpack had a slow start to the year, but finished really strong, a 5-0 finish. And they're making their sixth appearance in this bowl game, first since 2010, but that is tied for the most appearances all time in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. For Kansas State, it's their debut to this bowl game, and it's their first time getting to see Avery Johnson start at quarterback. He was seen as their quarterback of the future, played at times this year as a complement to Will Howard, but he now is the starter with Howard transferring. And it should be really interesting to see him as the guy. He is a dual threat. They really like to use his legs. In fact, when they've played him this year, they've primarily used him as a runner. So it's going to be fun to see him as the trigger man to this offense. Unfortunately, K-State's going to be without offensive coordinator Colin Klein, who's going to College Station. So that certainly is a blow. We'll see how much of an impact that has on this team. But I think this is a pretty even matchup. Two teams stylistically pretty similar. They aren't explosive teams offensively, but they do enough to get the job done. And both teams pretty stout defensively, especially Kansas State. They have the 25th total defense and 17th against the run. I think it's going to be helpful against a K-State team that probably is going to lean towards the run game with a more running quarterback. So that should be a lot of fun to see the NC State defense against the K-State offense. But NC State offensively, they've been weak, 98th in total offense. They have to win with defense, so expect a low-scoring game here. I think this game is largely a toss-up, at least when you are looking at these teams from a regular season perspective. But the portal / the NFL is going to turn things in NC State's favor. NC State doesn't have a lot of opt-outs. Opt-outs that are notable include wide receiver Terrell Timmons, tight end Sed Seabrow, center Lyndon Cooper, and defensive lineman CJ Clark. But that does not include the Butkus Award winner at linebacker Peyton Wilson, who just had a fantastic season. He is playing in his last game as a Wolfpack, and I think it's hard to overestimate his impact on this team and this defense. For K-State, it's a different story. We already mentioned Will Howard, but running back Trayshawn Wood, wide receiver RJ Garcia, tight ends, last fullback Ben Sinnott, who was kind of their X-factor offensively, a linebacker Nate Matlock, a cornerback Will Lee, safety Kane Savage. They are all not playing for now. Cooper Beebe, the All-American guard, will play, but he could maybe make a different decision later on. That is something to monitor. But I do like NC State. I think the opt-outs really turn what is an even game in their favor, but still, it could be a pretty fun one there in Orlando. To finish up the day, at 9:15 Eastern on ESPN, we've got the 31st Alamo Bowl from San Antonio, Texas, and the Alamo Dome. And this is, I think, probably the best bowl outside of the New Year's Six, featuring 10-2, 12th-ranked Oklahoma versus 14th-ranked 9-3 Arizona. And the Arizona Wildcats, they finish as one of the hottest teams in the nation, finishing 6-0. And they are a team that is especially good offensively. The 11th passing offense is spearheaded, of course, by freshman quarterback Noah Fifita, who really came on. In fact, moving to him as the QB kind of helped change the trajectory of the season. And I think Arizona making their first bowl appearance since 2017 and going for their first bowl win since 2015, especially going against an opponent like Oklahoma, I would have to think this team looking for their 10th win is really going to put forth a great performance and really show off to the world the type of team that they've been. Probably kind of didn't get the attention they maybe deserved because of those three losses in the first half of the season, two of those coming in overtime, and one possession loss to Washington. So if you haven't seen Arizona this year or haven't seen them in the later half of the year, definitely tune in. This is a really good football team, and going against an Oklahoma team that should be in a New Year's Six Bowl, the resume surely supports that. Only team to defeat a playoff team outside of the team they defeated, Texas, who is in the playoffs. So they're the only non-playoff team to defeat a playoff team this year. And year two under Brent Venables, the Sooners certainly took a really big step forward. And things have kind of come full circle. As you remember, Lincoln Riley left. That was a 10-2 Alamo-bound team. And now in year two under BV, the Sooners are 10-2 and back in the Alamo Bowl. Second time all time. So could be a really good matchup. There are some unknowns on Oklahoma's side. For the Sooners, they are starting Jackson Arnold for the first time. He is a really hyped freshman quarterback. And a reason why Don Gabriel is transferring, who was a great quarterback for the Sooners, he's off to Oregon. Big portal addition there for the Ducks. But they really like Jackson Arnold. They see him as the future of this team. And we're going to see him in action against a really good opponent. So that's really going to be interesting to watch. But anytime you're starting a new quarterback, especially a freshman, there's always just the unknown. That's going to be really interesting to see. Then also, what exactly does Oklahoma offense look like as Jeff Lebby left to take the head coaching job at Mississippi State? So the new OCs are Joe John Finley and Seth Luttrell. Luttrell is the play caller, and it's our first opportunity to see what the offense might look like with these new OCs. Now, I would imagine this game isn't really going to give us a great insight into some potential changes they could make, considering that you don't have a full offseason. It's just the extended layoff for the bowl game. So while you certainly could see some tweaks, I imagine they're still going to run something very similar to what we saw throughout the regular season. But that still is going to be interesting to watch and is kind of another unknown there. But if everything does come together offensively for the Sooners, I think they see some opportunity in the passing game, which has been one of the strengths for what was a pretty explosive, albeit inconsistent, offense this year. Arizona's weaknesses in pass defense, and the Sooners have a strong staple wide receiver and at least a talented QB in Arnold. We'll see if they can put that together. Something that is going to probably go a long way in determining the outcome is the battle in the trenches. Oklahoma is going to be pretty thin on the offensive line with several opt-outs either via the portal or the NFL. So that is a thin group, going to be some new guys playing that haven't played much this year, and some new starters. And so that's going to be important. Can Arizona disrupt Arnold, and can Oklahoma protect Arnold? That's going to be huge. And Arizona, good rushing defense, 20th in rushing defense. Oklahoma's running game really improved down the stretch, but they weren't great throughout most of the season. So I think the ability to protect Arnold and try to exploit Arizona's secondary is going to be a key matchup to watch. So that's going to be really interesting. And then on the other side of the ball, Oklahoma at times played really good defensive football, but kind of sputtered towards the later part of the season, especially in their passing defense, as they actually rank 100th in passing defense. And we already talked about how good Arizona is at throwing the football. Could potentially be a shootout if both of these passing offenses really take off. But we'll see if Oklahoma, with a month to kind of regroup, if they can get back to the defense they were playing earlier in the year. They have been one of the better takeaway defenses nationally, which is certainly important. And Oklahoma has got some really good news on the defensive side of the ball with players who are returning. That includes Billy Bowman, the All-American safety, who leads the nation in pick sixes, as well as All-American linebacker Danny Stutzman. So there certainly are some really good pieces here for Oklahoma defensively. We'll see if they can put it together against an explosive offense. But this has the potential to be a really good game against two pretty good football teams here, even though they didn't necessarily get rewarded with, I think, the bowl that was necessarily deserved. But a good matchup here. I do like Arizona to win this one. There's some unknowns for Oklahoma that are hard to predict. And while I do think Oklahoma is going to be ready to play in this one, we only have one data point for Brent Venables in bowl games, and he certainly had his team prepared against a Florida State team that came in much stronger than OU last season and still nearly won that one. So I do think Oklahoma, despite maybe not being real enthused about the bowl destination. I think they will play, but I think this Arizona team's going to be definitely motivated. They've been really hot to end the year, and I think they're going to find a way to win this one, but it's a really interesting matchup for sure. Let's move on to Friday, December 29th, and this is the day where the New Year's Six kicks off as the Cotton Bowl is played that night, but we do have other bowl games throughout the day. So starting noon Eastern on ESPN, the 79th Gator Bowl from Jacksonville, Florida, and a rematch of the 2009 Music City Bowl, won by Kentucky, will take place, featuring the 22nd ranked 8-4 Clemson Tigers from the ACC against 7-5 Kentucky of the ace of the SEC. Clemson, disappointing year, but did finish 4-0, and a team that plays really good defense. They're going against a Kentucky team that is porous offensively, so expect a low-scoring game here. The question is which offense can find more success. For Kentucky, they are coming off of their best game of the season, upsetting Louisville. Kind of helps take the poor taste out of their mouth as they finished 2-5, but at least have the potential to defeat good football teams. And I imagine they're going to be pretty stoked to play Clemson in a bowl game. For Kentucky, this is their third Gator Bowl appearance, and all of them have come in the Mark Stoops era. So some familiarity here. But as we said, two good defenses. Clemson, 7th nationally, 5th against the pass. Kentucky, they have the 26th rushing defense. And Clemson, they tend to run the ball better than they pass it. Clemson, they're making their first Gator Bowl appearance since 2008, which was Dabo Sweeney's first bowl game. So things kind of coming full circle there. Clemson, the better team, but, you know, could be a very low-scoring game and could be a very close game. Opt-outs certainly are a factor for Clemson. They're going to be without wide receiver Bo Collins, offensive lineman Mitchell Mays, defensive lineman Rook Orthorho, linebacker Jeremiah Trotter, cornerback Nate Wiggins. That in particular is a pretty big loss. And then safety Andrew Mukupa. For Kentucky, fewer opt-outs, but still are a few of them. Tight end Jordan Dingle, defensive lineman Keaton Wade, and quarter Jalen Geiger. I like Clemson in this game. I think they're the better team, the more talented team. This could be a better game than you maybe anticipate, just due to the offensive struggles from both teams, the defensive strength from both teams, and the fact that Kentucky got more time to prepare and probably going to be very enthused for this matchup. Next up, 2 p.m. on CBS, we've got the 90th Sun Bowl from El Paso, Texas. Oregon State coming in at number 19th in the nation against the 16th ranked 9-3 Notre Dame. And Oregon State, they're 8-4. If I did not say that. These two teams have played in several bowl games, including the 2000 Fiesta Bowl and the 2004 Insight Bowl. So it has been a while. Oregon State making their third appearance in the Sun Bowl. Most recent was back in 2008, and Notre Dame, their second appearance, last one back in 2010 against Miami. Even though Oregon State didn't finish the year great, they lost their last two and finished 2-3. They're still a team that had a good season. And Notre Dame, you know, some disappointing losses, but still a good team as well, going for their 10th win. When the matchup was announced, I thought this game was maybe the top bowl matchup outside of the New Year's Six, and maybe it still will be. Unfortunately, both of these teams have just been ravished by the transfer portal. For Oregon State, that's not a surprise, considering that they are no longer going to be a Power 5 team next year. So a lot of these players are bolting either to the NFL or to other programs. And it leaves them in a really difficult situation. At quarterback, DJ Uiagalelei, the starter, he's gone, as well as the quarterback that was seen as the QB of the future, and Aiden Giles, who was following head coach Jonathan Smith to Michigan State. They're also going to be without one of their best offensive playmakers and running back, Damon Martinez, who was arrested. Maybe his standing will change, but right now he's not expected to play. Wide receiver Anthony Gold has opted out, as well as Jack Veeling, their tight end, and All-American offensive tackle Talese Fuga. On the defensive side of the ball, it's not as severe, but still they're going to be without linebacker Easton Mascarmus Arnold, corner Jermond McCoy, and safety Atticus Sappington. So this Oregon State team really hit hard by opt-outs, and I don't think they have the depth to really make up for it. For Notre Dame, Sam Hartman, their quarterback, is going to be gone, as well as wide receivers Chris Tyreek, Rick Flores, and Tobias Mayweather. Other offensive opt-outs include tight end Hayden Stays, center Zeke Cornell, and their tackles Joe Alt, who is probably going to be a top 10, maybe even a top 5 draft pick, as well as Blake Fischel, who is another NFL offensive lineman. Now, on the defensive side, defensive end Nana Afmeika Mina, he is gone, as well as tackle Marius Lufay, and then defensive back Ramond Henderson. So both of these teams really hit hard by the portal / the NFL, and who knows then what game to expect. I imagine it does lean in Notre Dame's favor, because I think they're going to have the a better depth to account for these defections. But both teams without starting quarterbacks, key offensive playmakers, especially for Notre Dame's passing game, they're probably going to need to lean on their strong staple of backs led by Audric Estime. But even then, three of their starting offensive linemen are gone, including their elite pair of tackles. So who really knows what to expect here? But for Oregon State, it's their final game as a Power 5 team. They've got a really high-profile opponent. I'm sure that, you know, for the players there, this is going to be a pretty emotional game, and definitely a game they're going to be very motivated to win. But a hard game to predict, and who really knows what's going to happen there. Kind of a wild card. And then the last game before the Cotton Bowl is 3:30 Eastern on ESPN. The 65th edition of the Liberty Bowl from Memphis, Tennessee, in a rematch of the 2017 game. You've got the hometown team Memphis, 9-3 of the AAC, against the Big 12, 7-5 Iowa State Cyclones. Both of these teams had pretty good seasons, comparatively speaking, and Iowa State really overachieved based on the expectation and the way that their roster got impacted by the betting scandal in the offseason. But we'll see what this game ends up looking like for Iowa State. Their running backs are pretty thin because of portal defections, and they are going to be without two offensive players opting out on offensive line: tight end Deshaun Hanukkah, and then guard Darrell Simmons. So that's going to hurt them, but Iowa State has not been a good offensive team throughout the season. They've been a more strong defensive team, and most of those players are still going to be around for this game. It's going to be fun to see that good Iowa State defense against a strong Memphis offense, because that is Memphis' strength. They are the 19th total offense and the 13th total passing offense in the nation, while defensively, they're not very strong. So it's kind of good on good and weakness on weakness in the Liberty Bowl. I do think Iowa State is the better team, and I think they win this one, but that is going to be a fun matchup to see good on good and weak on weak for that one. Moving on to Saturday, December 30th, a day that includes both the Fiesta and the Orange Bowl, we've got a couple of non-New Year's Six games. Kind of surprising they decided to pit these, you know, going against major bowls. You'd think for viewership reasons you wouldn't do that, but alas, that's what we've got. So 2 p.m. on ABC, this is going to be going against the Peach Bowl and then into the Orange Bowl. We've got the Music City Bowl, the 25th edition of this game from Nashville, Tennessee, featuring Auburn, 6-5 or 6-6 team from the SEC against 7-5 Maryland of the Big Ten. For Auburn, they're making their first appearance in this game since 2018, and they have a 2-0 record in the Music City Bowl, and they are looking with a victory to secure their first winning season since 2020. For Maryland, they are making their debut in this game. This is a game that features two pretty comparable teams, so I think it's got to be a good one. For Maryland, they are a passing football team. They're not good at running the football. They're not very good defensively, but they can really air it out with a good group of wide receivers and quarterback Tulia Tagovailoa. For Auburn, they are a strong passing defense, or at least a respectable one, coming in at number 29. So that is going to be a fun matchup. For Auburn, they're kind of the polar opposite. They run the ball very well, with the 15th rushing offense in the nation, but they can't throw it. Certainly not consistently ranking 125th. So I think the key here, can Auburn slow down this explosive attack? You don't want to get in a shootout with Maryland, but if they can keep it more low scoring, I think their running game could kind of control this one and then control the clock and wear down Maryland. while keeping their offense fresh. So that's going to be interesting for opt-outs. Maryland is hit a little harder. Tight end Corey Dykes, linebacker Jashawn Barham, and then cornerbacks Tarleeb Still and Corey Cooley are gone. With both cornerbacks out, maybe an opportunity for Auburn to get some unusual success through the air and do look for that play action, soften them up with the ground game, then maybe take some shots on the perimeter. For Auburn, wide receiver Malcolm Johnson, and then quarterback Robbie Ashford, who is not their primary starter, but he does come in, particularly in the red zone or in a kind of obvious running situation. So Peyton Thorne, he's going to be the guy for the entirety of the day. I think Auburn wins this one, but I do think it's kind of a toss-up. I kind of like the combination of being able to control the game with their ground game and potentially slowing down Maryland with a very respectable passing defense. I think that does lean in Auburn's favor. So I'm going with the Tigers, but could be a close when they're in Nashville. And then 4:30 Eastern on the CW, and this game's going directly against the Orange Bowl. We've got the 8th edition of the Arizona Bowl from Tucson, Arizona, featuring Toledo, the 11-2 MAC runner-up, against Wyoming, an 8-4 Mountain West team, and a team that is going to be sending off Craig Bohl, the longtime Wyoming, and then before that, North Dakota State head coach, and he started and built that Bison dynasty that lives on even today. That does give Wyoming some extra motivation. Two teams that certainly were respectable throughout the regular season. Toledo had a really good year. For Wyoming, they started the season hot and then kind of fell apart towards the end. Started 5-1 and finished 3-3. Was a good team, certainly at times. And remember, they opened the year by defeating Texas Tech. For Wyoming, they are not a very good offensive team. So they need to keep this low scoring. They've only got the 120th passing offense and the 116th total offense. So they are really going to need to show out defensively. For Toledo, they've been a really strong offense, particularly on the ground with the 11th running offense, and defensively complementary as well, particularly against the pass. So don't expect Wyoming to do much through the air. Toledo saw some pretty unfortunate news as a really good quarterback, Deshaun Finn, is portaling. They're also going to be without guard Vinny Sinney. That's a big loss, and I think it might be too much to overcome. Even though Toledo was a better team this year, Wyoming, when they put together, they were strong. And being Craig Bohl's last game, I like Wyoming to win this one. But if the Orange Bowl, between commercials, they're looking for something to turn over to CW for the Arizona Bowl. And then to finish up the non-New Year's Six Bowls, we move forward to New Year's Day. We've got two going on at the same time, as well as going up against the Fiesta Bowl. We've got noon Eastern on ESPN, the 38th Relica Quest Bowl from Tampa, Florida, featuring LSU, the 13th ranked 9-3 SEC team, against Wisconsin, a 7-5 Big Ten team. And unfortunately, I think this is not a very comparable matchup. Wisconsin just wasn't good this year, plain and simply. And they're going against an LSU team that was disappointing considering the expectation, they were still a very solid football team and very explosive. So I think if you're looking at Wisconsin, the hope is that, LSU defensively was not good, and you're hoping that, Phil Longo and that offense that didn't get the job done this year with that extra bowl prep, that they're able to kind of reformulate themselves, maybe more physical than they were for a lot of the season, and have some offensive success. And then, and this is certainly a really big factor in this game, Heisman Trophy winner Jaden Daniels, who was by far and away the engine that fueled this LSU team, and they relied on him in many ways, both through the air and on the ground. He is opting out, and potentially Malik Nabers, the All-American wide receiver, could as well. That's TBD at this point. But it wouldn't shock me, particularly without Daniels. Maybe that does slow down the LSU offense enough that we could see a close game. But certainly based on the regular season, LSU is a much better team. At least two did play relatively recently in non-conference games, as they played two neutral site games. And they split those two back in 2014 and 2016 for LSU. They're going to be with Garrett Neusmeyer, who is a kind of hyped quarterback prospect. In fact, some thought he might take the job from Daniels going into this season, obviously. That was kind of a foolish assumption by some, but it does show how highly regarded he is, and he's going to be the man moving forward. So there is going to be a drop-off at the quarterback position, but it still might be not enough to tilt things in Wisconsin's favor. And for Wisconsin, they certainly have some notable opt-outs. Braylon Allen, their best player maybe, the running back, he's gone, as well as wide receiver Chameen Dyke, wide receiver Skylar Bell, and linebacker Jordan Turner. So what has been a more pass-centric offense, at least compared to recent Wisconsin teams, to have out some of their top wideouts. It's going to be really interesting to see this Wisconsin offense. They're going to need to perform at a high level to win it. We'll see if they can, based on their struggles throughout the season and with some of the players who are not participating. The Badgers are making their record 6th appearance in this game and first since 2015. LSU their third and their first since 2014. And then the last bowl game kicking off hour later, 1 p.m. Eastern on ABC, the 78th edition of the Citrus Bowl from Orlando, featuring two ranked teams, 8-4 Tennessee of the SEC, ranked 21st, and then the 17th ranked 10-3 Big Ten runner-up Iowa. This game has the potential to be really interesting, or at least there is some unknowns. You've got Iowa, a team that is built to have success in the Big Ten. They're not good offensively, but they're elite defensively. Will that formula transfer when you're taking on a ranked SEC school? Tennessee's really not one of the better or best, I should say, SEC schools, but certainly a very respectable one in the top half of the conference. Is that going to be a winning formula? I really don't know, but it's going to be interesting question to be answered. But expect a defensive matchup here. You've got an elite Iowa defense with elite defensive coordinator Phil Parker, the Frank Broyles Award winner, against a Tennessee team that really improved on defense this year and offensively wasn't explosive as we've seen in the past. They've had to lean more into their run game. Is that going to be a winning formula against Iowa? I'm not really sure, but Tennessee does always have the potential, even though they don't necessarily hit them consistently, to throw the deep ball. So if Iowa is really geared up to stop the run, and if they leave some of their cornerbacks or safeties on islands, Tennessee's going to try to exploit that. So that could be a fun cat and mouse game between at least a capable Tennessee offense with a lot of potential against a elite Iowa defense. That's going to be really fun, but Iowa's defense, they need to win that battle if they're going to have a chance, because it's hard to see Iowa's offense putting up more than, say, 13 points, and that even might be a little generous. Of course, this is the last opportunity to see one of the best punters in recent memory, the Ray Guy Award winner, Torrey Taylor, who was probably the star player for Iowa, the past 3 or 4 years, and he's been instrumental to this team's success because they've had to win with defense and special teams, and he has been able, in a majority of their games, help win the battlefield position. That could be important in this game once again. And even though Iowa is really a one-sided team, as in they're really only good defensively and they're terrible offensively, they've got some real heavy hitters on the defensive side of the ball, including unanimous All-American defensive back Cooper DeShawn and All-American linebacker Jay Higgins. They need to really anchor a group that must perform at a high level and probably even get a couple of takeaways. I do like Tennessee in this game. I just think Iowa's formula, while it could very well get the job done, it is really putting too much stress on your special teams and defense. I think Tennessee is obviously the more complete team, and I think that's going to be enough to win it. But it'll be interesting to see, is this a four-quarter game? Does Tennessee run away with it? Does Iowa end up pulling off a low-scoring win like they have in Big Ten play? We will see. But an interesting matchup there to close the bowl season. And then after these two matchups, you've only got the semifinal games and then the national championship. So that will do it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time when we preview the New Year's Six and then later for our college football playoff preview episode. Thank you for listening. This is the Ultimate College Football Podcast.